Welcome to the Fantasy Golf Insider Podcast. I'm Jeff Bergerson, joined as always by Zachary Turcotte.
How's it going, my friend?
It's going well. It's kind of a hangover from our last major championship of the year. We don't have another one for quite some time. Yeah. We do have the 3M Open this week, which is fun for us because it's a home game, just 20 minutes from us. So I always enjoy this week. I always enjoy the course and everything. But you can, of course, find us at fantasygolfinsider.com for all of your research tools that you could possibly need, some of the best in the industry. Plus, we write articles each and every week detailing the event, who the players were picking, who we're betting on, etc. So be sure to check us out at fantasygolfinsider.com. Zachary, we'll dive into the 3M. Let's talk briefly about the Open Championship. A couple of talking points, but first we'll just go with Foxy, who pulled it out at the end. Man, that dude just had the look of someone who was locked in. And I said to my kids as we're watching it, just his walk, you could just see it, that he was feeling it, and he came through super clutch. Man, 18, just stripe a drive, knock down an approach, and stick a putt. Just how you're supposed to do it.
It's crazy. And, like, no hesitation on any of his shots. Like, he was ready to go on 18, like, 5 minutes before he was teeing off. He had it teed up. And then, yeah, I mean, he's not standing over it in the fairway. He's hitting a shot. And then, I mean, the TV barely had time to get to him before he's already lined up and hitting his putt. Like, it was so quick. It was kind of a Brant Snedeker mode there that he was with the putt. I'm like, oh, here it is. And yeah, no, didn't, which is smart. Didn't stand there and think about it for an extra 5 minutes. And yeah, just went out and knocked it down. And of course, I mean, it was, I think I texted you at the time. I had a pretty nice sized ticket on Fox at Royal Birkdale back in 2017.
Right.
I think it was 250-1 at that point that year. It was one of those guys who was still kind of more on the Euro tour, but he played pretty well and felt like kind of a little sneaky play. And then, yeah, he completely missed the cut over there. But that's kind of been the case for me with Ryan Fox over the years, is he has these brilliant moments and I'm just usually not in on it. I've probably played him several times this year in lineups and gotten hurt. The Players Championship probably be the most obvious one, but even at the signature event a few weeks back, I played him and he was near the bottom, didn't do particularly well. And I remember looking at him last week and I kind of looked over his history at the Open. I thought, I don't, you know, what's his upside here? Maybe 27th or something like that. And I just, didn't have him in my player pool. One of the rare weeks, I think, where I've, you know, looked him over and didn't use him. So that was a little bit of a disappointment. I could see it coming. I could feel it coming. I'm like, yeah, I have no part of him at all this week. So I know how this is going to come out. I didn't have Cam Young either. So in fairness, at least it didn't hurt that bad. Sam Burns was the guy that I needed to win on Sunday because he was on my cash game lineup. But of course it's Sam Burns. So he's very quickly placing himself into like Ricky Fowler territory with an inability to close at major tournaments. So that was a little bit disappointing, but it was a nice win for Fox. It's a guy who's been around forever. I mean, he's 39 years old. So kind of cool to see a player like that, who's been grinding so long, get a real career defining win. Yeah, how did your teams do for the week?
Did okay. Nothing spectacular. I told you I had a 6 of 6 in the $200 single entry, and I was just hoping for a min cash.
Didn't
get it.
Oh, really? With a 6 of 6?
I swear to God, I did not get a cash with a 6 of 6.
Yeah.
And on that roster, let me see here. You won't even believe this.
So your whole team choked over the weekend.
Oh my God. No one of the six was minus, what was under par on Sunday, and they combined for a plus 17.
Jeez.
I mean, good grief. Yeah, no, it was ugly. Let's see. What was that squad? It was, oh yeah, and I had Matsuyama on that team.
Okay.
T14, Xander T18.
Yeah.
And then Rom, Hatton, Alex Fitzpatrick, and Patrick Reed.
So, yeah, it was... So
one of the worst six of six you could possibly have.
Yeah, it was frustrating for me. My main lineup went 3 of 6. I thought I was doing pretty well with Henley, Bobby Mack, and Sam Burns for my three bottom value plays. You get those guys who play pretty well, and you're thinking, hey, now just the top guys have to come through. Well, they didn't. Matthew Fitzpatrick inexplicably got crushed. Wyndham Clark, one of the hottest players in the world over the last 6 to 7 weeks, he got crushed. And then your guy, Victor Hovland, rounded things out by also getting crushed. So it's pretty discouraging when weeks like that happen, because you look at a team like that and you just think, could I really plan for any of these guys, let alone all three, to miss the cut going into the weekend? I mean, that's pretty discouraging. So I don't know. It was, it's definitely on the frustrating side. And even still on Sunday, I still had a chance for that to cash. But then Sam Burns just made a birdie early on, and then three bogeys in a row, and then just nothing the rest of the way. Couldn't do anything. So even with 3 of 6, I was still borderline to cash. But yeah, Burns couldn't pull it out for me. Blew the bonus, blew the win, all those things. So a little bit frustrating for the week.
All right, should we? Oh no, actually, one more topic before we move on.
Oh, we're gonna talk Bryson.
Yeah, it was funny. We were sitting here watching it at the time. And yeah. I believe it was on hole 5. And Bryson just completely off the grid hit it. And there was water. They showed the zoom out, and there was water. He missed the water, but he was in the longest stuff you've ever seen. And the next shot from the coverage was him. And the ball was in like a cleared out area. And I said to my son, I'm like, wow, what are the odds? It misses the water and then misses the 4-foot-tall fescue all around there. And it's sitting so he could find it, and he has a shot.
Yeah. Yeah.
And of course, at that time, there was nothing said about anything. He just shot it and moved on. And then I'm listening to coverage, after the round, and they're talking about, going back to that hole, he trampled the fescue apparently. And I have a couple of different thoughts on it.
Yeah.
One, I hate when when golf does this though. There's so much coverage on these top guys. We talked about it years back with John Rahm. Remember when his ball? A microscopic view on this, and it's not a fair playing field, right? Not everyone has this. And I hate that it takes social media posting to have them even look at it.
Right.
Right. Yeah, so I hate how that was set up, but I haven't seen any footage of him actually going in there, stomping it down, or how it took place. And then of course you have Rory chiming in with his, you don't like Bryson anyway, just shut up, Rory. but by seeing it it didn't look right to the eye test at first.
Yeah,
but then I also don't like how it came about with the penalty. What are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I wasn't watching live. We were at the state baseball tournament, and you texted me like, are you following what's happening with Bryce? I'm like, wow, it looks like he's playing pretty well. And then get on a Twitter to sort of figure out what's happening. I'm like, oh, I see. It looks like I got texts from a few people almost at the same time going through it. And then this whole big controversy explodes. And yeah, I didn't really see it live. There sounded like Brandel thought it was a for sure kind of penalty. Obviously Rory thought it was definitely a penalty. that's where, I mean, it gets tough because, you know, you're walking around. Bryson's a guy who's going to analyze his shot from 100 different angles anyway. So it's really hard for me to get inside his head and be like, he was definitely cheating or he definitely wasn't cheating. I don't know. I'm more inclined to give a guy the benefit of the doubt. Unless it's just egregious, I probably wouldn't have called a penalty on him, especially after the fact. I just don't think they just shouldn't be doing that. It's either got to happen, you know, almost immediately or just Correct. Not at all.
Like they have, like they have to have officials with eyes on it.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
And if you don't, then you can't penalize it looking back.
Right? Yeah. You don't do that in like an NHL game. Right. Well, after the game's over, maybe this was a goal. Maybe not. Not exactly. At all.
Yep.
Maybe, you know, pass interference. You don't tell them after the game. Oh, maybe that was PI. Maybe the other team wins now instead. Like it's just stupid. And then Bryson, of course, he overreacts and gets goofy and pouts, and he's not going, you know, I have to think about whether or not I'm going to play tomorrow. Like, yeah, you're not thinking about it. You're playing tomorrow. Yeah. But fortunately, it didn't end up mattering much in the score because Bryson ended up falling back. I mean, had he been close, then it would have been the only thing we would have heard about. So we got a little bit lucky there, perhaps, that he did finally fall back. But yeah, it was interesting. And of course, it has to happen to a guy like Bryson. You know, it's not anybody else that's out there that's doing it. It's not Jackson Suber, like you were kind of mentioning before.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
It's got to be Bryson, the most controversial player in the world probably right now to deal with. So gave us some Friday afternoon entertainment, to say the least.
Absolutely. All right, now we can go on to the 3M Open. TPC Twin Cities, been the host now for 7 years. It is a really fun course. A lot of risk and reward holes, eagleable holes, but also blow-up holes as well. Just huge extremes. 7,431 yards, par 71. We got bent grass greens. It's an Arnold Palmer design. Tons of water on 15 holes. And we will see, you know, many double and triple bogeys on the week. Second most water balls of any course or event on the PGA Tour. A couple of interesting notes that I was looking at as far as who has won this event in the past. It has been toward the longer ball hitters off the tee, good tee to green players, and not really great putters.
Right? Yeah.
We've seen Kurt Kitayama win last year. Johnny Vegas won a couple years ago. We've seen Camp Champ win. We've seen Tony Finau win. None of them are good putters at all, but they get off the tee. They have a good tee to green game overall. So that's kind of the type of guys that I like to gravitate toward this week. What do you look at as far as types of players, and then also what do you have for comp courses?
You know, I kind of have a couple of different ways to go as far as the comp courses are concerned. Because I do feel like just you go through the description of a course like this and the time of year that we're playing in, it feels a lot like the Florida courses. A little easier, slightly easier version of what we see down in Florida. So I do use a course like Bay Hill is one that I end up using as a comp course. Obviously Bay Hill is much tougher than here, but just with the types of navigation, having to get around the water, having to be able to get pretty good distance off the tee. I also like to use some of the easier courses, some of the summer courses, and earlier fall courses as well. Courses where there's plenty of scoring. This tends to be a spot each year where, you know, we've kind of mentioned over the last few weeks, I think we started talking about it during Deer Run at the John Deere Classic, but this is where a lot of guys who've maybe struggled throughout other chunks of the year during the spring and the summer on some of the harder courses start to pick it up a little bit more later in the year. You get a lot of guys who all of a sudden will put together four or five, you know, top 15, top 10 finishes on courses like here and Deer Run, you know, Detroit. a lot of these courses. So comp courses for the week, I've got Deer Run, Summerlin, Keene Trace, Detroit, Craig Ranch, Tahoe, and Bay Hill were kind of my favorites. Any other ones that you used?
No, I don't think so. I think that pretty much covers it. I look at the easier scoring courses that we usually see in the summer. In lesser fields, we've seen guys yep. play well at the ISCO and John Deere also play, and Detroit also play well here. So those type of guys, yep. we've seen younger guys kind of pop here sometimes. So
yeah, so where Matthew Wolf got his win yep. on the inaugural event years back.
Yep, some up-and-comers. We saw a couple here last year play really well, like William Mao. Pearson Cootie played well here last year. Jake Knapp is a younger guy. So we see those younger guys find a place here where they can do well. And
yeah, I like that.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I really like that narrative. And I was kind of talking to a friend last week who was going to go out and watch. And they were asking me, like, who should I focus on, or who should I follow around if I see anybody? I'm like, well, Scotty's going to have a huge crowd, so I would avoid him. And then I listed just a handful of guys, younger guys, because we've seen the younger guys who've done really well at this event. But I said, you know, focus on, go see a guy like Jackson Koivun if he's here, you know, Ben James if he's here. I'm a little disappointed that Blades Brown is not here. He would have right. been another one that would have been fun to see. But yeah, yep. those guys we've seen over the years. Yeah, that first year it was like Morikawa was in the mix, Bryson was in the mix, Wolf was in the mix. So yeah, it can be a really fun event for some of those emerging talents.
Let's take a look at the pricing this week. DraftKings found a way to absolutely butcher it. Yeah. Scottie Scheffler is a 3-1 favorite to win this week, which I will not be putting an outright on him. Probably not too disproportionate to last week, where he was a 6-1 favorite with that field. So he might as well be a 3-1 with this field. But DraftKings priced him at $14,900 this week.
Yeah, in a much worse field. I mean, we went through it. I mean, you could put teams together. They're just not going to be very, very exciting teams for you. If you have to, you know, 7,000 is your average for either five. So that means if you want like one player around like 8K or so, then you're basically in the sixes for the rest of your team. And the rest of this field is not terribly strong. So you're going to have a really hard time on the GPP side trying to build around Scotty. I don't like it at all. Yeah, again, like outside of the U.S. Open, where it was kind of fluky that he ended up in the winning GPP lineups, I don't think since his win back at the Amex, he's been on a winning GPP team. So, you know, from that perspective, you probably stay away from him. If you want to try to, you know, get 4 of 6 in cash with Scotty and take his, you know, third place or second place finish and try to get a few other guys through the cut around him, I guess that might be manageable. But on the tournament side of things, yeah, it's going to be a challenge. I mean, unless he wins and blows away the field and you're able to build, you know, dozens and dozens of different lineups and hit maybe one or two of those, it's going to be really, really tough to work with Scotty. So yeah, I'm shocked that they bumped the price way, way up. I think we even joked about that a few weeks ago. We were wondering, you know, I think I even said to you, I don't think it was during a pod or not, but I thought there's a good chance with how weak this field is going to be that he might be like 5K higher than the next guy. And then sure enough, there he is, $5,000 more expensive than Maverick McNealy. But I guess then if you don't want Scotty, it opens up your options. Which of these 9K guys are you going to lead in with?
Yeah. Yeah,
I don't.
You know, I guess I can go to back to Tom Kim at 9,300. Missed the cut last week at the Open. He was the chalk bomb, which I was thankfully avoided. But everything seemed to line up for him last week, coming off the win. But it's coming off a win. We talk about that a lot. But yeah. I kind of like him here. He gets a head start on everybody back to the States. So 9,300. Right. I also like Pearson Cootie. has the scoring ability, long off the tee, played well here last year, has been playing better. He started the season red hot, then went, you know, dealing with injury, went through a slump. Recently, he's been okay, so I'm going to own him at 9,100.
Give me some Kurt Kitayama. I don't mind going back to the defending champ. He's got a pair of top 10 finishes here. He was sixth 2 years ago. He's a former winner at one of the comp courses that I mentioned at Bay Hill as well. And he's had a pretty good season. Look at him over the last 24 rounds. He ranks ninth among the field in strokes gained tee to green and 11th in strokes gained total there. So I don't mind that. I think I probably will avoid Maverick McNealy there. You mentioned Tom Kim, probably a good week for a bounce back. Not terribly excited over 9,300. I think I will be in on Jackson Koivu, and he burned me a few weeks back at the John Deere. But you know, we talked about the young guys and having big performances, and this is a player who is going to be very, very good in his career. He did have a 10th place finish 2 weeks ago. He was extremely strong towards the end of last season, a number of top finishes there. I think from here on in, from here all the way through the fall season, he's going to be a player to watch. I think he's absolutely going to have some weeks where he's in contention, and I think this could definitely be one of those weeks. So I will go back to Koivu there. What do you think about Hideki there at 9,700? I guess I don't love the price for him. He's looked pretty good the last few times out, you know, a couple of 14th place finishes. Really just hasn't been in contention since the meltdown at the Waste Management. Do you worry about motivation at all for players coming back from over the seas?
I do with him, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, he has been playing a little bit better recently.
Yeah.
But nah, I have this feeling like he just doesn't give a shit. And
he did withdraw here in 2022. So I
remember it well.
He is one of the guys who has done that. We've seen that happen to a number of times. He may make my player pool just on default, depending on what the parameters look like salary wise. Because Jake Knapp has been so down of late since coming back. I can't go there. Keith Mitchell too up and down for me to pay 9,500. So I think he is out. I could potentially line up for Pearson Cootie at 9,100. Not super excited with the price. I mean, it's been a long time since he's had a top 10 kind of finish there. He's kind of in the same boat as like Doug Gim, where
I like Gim too.
Good, not quite great. Yeah, I think I like Gim there. He's had some pretty good finishes here. Got a guy who plays here every year, which I like. He was off this past week, which I also like. So coming in pretty fresh. The numbers for him have been pretty good. You know, I know the putter is always a big issue, but like right now over the last 24 rounds, it's basically flat. He's not gaining strokes. He's just not losing strokes. As long as he's not losing strokes, I can work with that because his tee to green game is third among this field over the last 24 rounds. So I do think a guy like Gim can pop. Jackson Suber, I really like what he's been doing the back half of this season. 8,900. He was actually in contention for a while. At the Open before, you know, things kind of fell back for him over the weekend. But, you know, he's had three top 10 finishes in his last seven starts. So he's another one of those players. And he was sixth at the John Deere. So I think he's one of those guys the rest of the season, into the rest of the summer, into the fall, that is only going to continue to build on the momentum that he's had there. So I really do like that range of players.
Dropping down 8K range. Interesting. Corey Connors is making an appearance here. First time in quite a long time. Not sure what to think about that. Has the tee to green game. Great ball striker. I don't love that he hasn't played here and that he's coming over from the Open, but he has played a bit better lately. So maybe I will win some shares there. I kind of like Max Homa there as well at 8,600, getting a little bit of a price break there. He played here last year and was fine. He's another guy who has been playing a bit better recently. Any interest in him?
I do like Max here. I liked him. I played him at John Deere. He had a second place finish there. you know, he's somebody who's been playing better over his last five starts. So he's made five straight cuts, and he's been pretty competitive in all of them too, which I like. And he's not a guy who, I mean, he's a guy who was a star just a few years ago. I mean, he was one of the top players on tour, but he doesn't seem like, it doesn't seem like his ego is in such a way that he feels bad that he's got to come back to, you know, playing in events like this. Cause he's been playing pretty steady over the last few weeks in some of the lesser events there too. So yeah, I don't mind Homa. I think he's somebody in play. What do you do with a guy like Sungjae? He's been either very hit or very miss here. 14th place finish this past week at the Open, but he's been either really good or really bad all season. I don't know. I probably won't end up playing him, but it sort of works in with the narrative of, if you look at like the Florida courses, those have been the spots where Sungjae has kind of made his money throughout his career. So it could be an interesting GPP choice. I do like Sam Stevens there at 8,400. He has a pair of top 10 finishes. He's made the cut in all three starts. He did miss the cut overseas the last couple of weeks, but beyond that, he's been a fairly consistent cut maker over the last couple of years. So I don't mind that. Is there any chance at all that you could go back to an old winner here in Tony Finau?
I'm toying with the idea. Last year was quite harmful to me. I was backing him regardless of form. It wasn't good, but I thought, you know, he can buck the trend and get back to a place he feels comfortable. I don't have as much confidence this year because he's coming in with poor form as well. Really hasn't done anything well. I think no. How about you?
Yeah, I'm probably a fade. Gosh. Maybe if they'd had his price lower, I could go back. But yeah, he's just been so mediocre for so much of the year. I don't know.
Look at the rolling stats, though. Like, his stats are horrendous over the past 12 rounds.
Yeah, it's ugly. It's not. Yeah, I mean, you have to stretch pretty far to get that top 10. If you go far enough back and can incorporate that sixth place finish that he had, they get a little bit better. But yeah, if you're looking at just over like the last 16 rounds, he's 81st in the field and in tee to green plays. His irons are horrible, around the green horrible. Putter is mediocre. Yeah, there's just not been a lot to really build on there. I'd probably be more inclined to just play a guy like Mac Meisner or even like Ben James. I really like Ben James. He is somebody that I will be playing. Talked about the younger players. He's been good. You look at the last couple of weeks in lesser fields, a 15th place finish and a 4th place finish. I just think he's one of those guys, the more experience that he gets, the going to be. He was I do James there quite a bit, instead of a guy like Finau, where it just feels like a coin flip for whether or not he might show up.
Exactly. Yep. Dropping down to 7K range. Michael Brennan, 7,800. I mentioned his name earlier. William Mao at 7,500. He had started to catch fire kind of before the 3M last year, about this same time. He's done it again this year, so he's riding some momentum. Maybe this is his time of year. I'll own him there. What I'm kind of torn, and I've gone back and forth, is Pendrith at 7,400.
Yeah.
I don't know what to do with him. He's not in my core as of right now. I can't decide.
Yeah, he's been all over the place. It feels like he's definitely had a drop off this season as far as his tee to green plays, because he was a guy a couple years ago who was just dynamite tee to green, and now it's been a little up and down. Sometimes it comes back for a week or so and he looks great. He had a second place finish a couple of weeks ago, and then, you know, next week comes back, he misses the cut. I'm not sure. I really like down in that lower range. Our guy Emiliano Grillo at 7,300. This has been a spot where he's been really good throughout his career. He's 5 of 6 in making the cut, and all five of those were top 25 finishes. And he's another guy who goes through these long, hot, and cold stretches. but it's starting to feel like maybe he is on the upswing. He's made five straight cuts. The last three finishes 20th, 23rd, 26th there. He's, you know, one of the areas where you usually worry about him is his putter. He's actually red hot with his putter over the last 16 rounds. He ranks 8th in terms of strokes gained putting, 10th in terms of strokes gained total over the last 16 rounds there. So that's really encouraging, although, you know, maybe he ends up being the guy who ends up being super chalky because of that. I also really like Ben Coles there at 7,300 as well. He's a guy who nearly won before things kind of fell apart a few weeks back. Outstanding tee to green numbers, great in terms of strokes gained total, three straight top 25 finishes, including that heartbreaking third place finish for him at the John Deere. But I like what we saw when he bounced back immediately. Like, he had that horrible letdown there, but then 15th place finish the next week. He's had a pair of top 25 finishes here the last 2 years. So I think he is a really strong play. I had real trouble with that 7K range. William Mao was one that showed up, but yeah, I struggled to really find anybody that I love. It's interesting seeing Jason Day here in no man's land at 7,600. He's just been awful for the last few months, which is interesting to see. You could maybe on GPPs throw in a guy like Aldrich Potgieter at 7,400. He's a little bit inconsistent, but at a longer course where play off the tee is a big factor, he's certainly one that could do a little bit of damage here. But yeah, there were not a lot of other names that I love down here. Is there anybody else that I missed who you're in on?
Well, here's the problem. You own Scotty and your average is $7,000 per player to fill out your roster. So
yeah,
you need five other guys down in this range.
Yeah, I mean, like Zach Boshue is somebody that we've played a lot this season. He's had a lot of top 25s. He had a ninth place finish this past week. He's got pretty solid tee to green numbers. So I think he's one there that you could fit at 71. I know you're going to laugh, but maybe a little bit of Matt Kuchar at 7,000.
Yeah, have fun with him. You take him.
This is the time when he tends to come alive. He's had four top 25 finishes in his last five starts. So, you know, he finished third here a couple of years ago. So it's a course that he has played at a few times. I'm not assuming that he's going to have another one of those finishes. I just don't see a lot of great names down in this range. There were a couple names in the sixes that we did look at that I'm at least mildly intrigued by. Aaron Wise at 6,600 certainly hasn't been somebody who's played great for much of the season, but the last few weeks have been pretty good. He's made three straight cuts. He's had two straight top 25 finishes. So he finished third and he finished 15th. I think he's really grinding at this point. You know, somebody who a few years ago we thought was going to be a star has gone through a lot of off-course struggles to try to work his way back. But it does seem like maybe the last few weeks he's turned a little bit of a corner on some of these lower field, easier types of events. I think you get some pretty decent value there for him at 6,600. Who are you looking at in this 6K range that you like?
Not much. I would strongly advise not owning more than one or two guys in this range. Chatfield maybe 6,200, Zach Blair 6,900, Tom Hoge 6,900. I would say would probably be all that I'm really interested in.
Any interest in Stefano Mazzoli coming off of his big win this past week in the alternate field?
Seeing as though I didn't know who that guy was before he won last week. No, I don't think.
Yeah, so. I mean, his recent form was, you know, he'd had a couple top 25s and a missed cut coming into that, and then bang, he comes over here and gets a win. So I guess I don't really know what to make of him. He certainly wasn't like a world beater over the last few months before he got his win. 6,500, that's at least a reasonably interesting price for him. But yeah, the rest of this down here is a little bit tricky. There's not too many names that are all that exciting for me. Yeah, it's, it, in looking at it, maybe a little bit of Tom Hoagie. We've talked about his connections to the area. He lives up in Fargo. He plays here every year. He's had a few top 25s. He's been a decent cup maker. He did finish 10th a couple weeks ago. He hasn't had a lot of real high finishes throughout the year, but okay, cut making wise. Zach Blair at 6,900 as well. He is coming off of a pair of top 10 finishes there. So his numbers are at least somewhat improving. Pretty good iron play, pretty good short game play there. And he did have a 13th place finish here back in 2023. That is really about it, though, in terms of the guys that I would actually consider in this lower end range.
All right. I will say, if anyone's going to be out at the 3M at TPC Twin Cities, hit us up, let us know. Maybe we can meet up, walk a few holes together or something like that. I'll be out there for the Pro-Am on Wednesday with the kids who are autograph hounds. So they'll be meeting and greeting with the players. And then Thursday, we're going to go out there and walk. My daughter and I usually walk 36 holes probably. So.
Oh, I forgot. We should probably give you the weather because you'll want to know. It looks actually pretty good. It doesn't look blazing hot.
It has been hot, but it's going to cool down, isn't it?
Looks like the highs on Thursday, it says around 73 degrees at 10 a.m., 82 at 1, and 83 at 4, with some partly cloudy in the morning. It looks like the sun always sunny at around 10 a.m., clouds coming in at 1, and it looks like it might be cloudy at 4, which a little cloud cover is never a bad thing on the course during this time of year. So not nearly as blazing hot as it has been. Pretty similar weather. Sunny all day on Friday. Highs peaking out. Right now it says about 84 degrees on Friday. So actually should be pretty nice weather. And if you're there in the morning, it's kind of perfect weather. And I know you will be there bright and early.
Bright and early is the best time to go because no one else is out there. So it's pretty cool. With that, if you have any questions, be sure to let us know. Otherwise, jump in the Slack chat as well. But we'll leave you with the 3M Open this week. Best of luck, and we'll be talking to you next week.
Good luck.